Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Why, hello there. Jasper here with a little update from us over at TBHHQ to say that this is not going to be a regularly scheduled Monday episode. This is a bit of a bonus episode, a peek behind the Patreon screen, as it were, to give you guys a little idea as to what the sort of thing we normally put out on our Patreon. This is just to give us a chance to catch up. We've all been going about a million miles an hour over here. We've been DMing, we've been playing and guesting on other things, and so we just wanted to take a little second, get our feet under ourselves so that we can make sure that we're still putting out all this amazing content for you all. And also give us a great time to say a huge thank you to all of our new listeners and our new patrons. We see you absolutely blown away by the amount of new faces and ears that we have welcomed to the TBH family. So thank you so much. Just to say that we have recently relaunched our Patreon with three lovely new shiny tiers and a new stretch goal. And we have a stretch goal of 250 patrons. We are coming up on it very, very quickly. And what we will be doing when we get 250 patrons is we will be doing merch. That is right. Three Black Halflings will be doing merch. So if you want to see TBH merch, why don't you head over to the Patreon and sign up? Every little helps, and every single patron helps us to get towards that stretch goal. If you can't contribute financially, I know how the times are at the moment, that is absolutely fine. But why not, whilst you're listening to this, go drop us a little review on whatever podcasting app you're using. It really, really helps us grow the show. And it's something super quick that you can do. Just give us a little rating and a review and say some nice words about what we do if you're enjoying listening to us. It means the world. Thank you so much for all of your continued support. And I hope that you enjoy this, our little Patreon exclusive for you all today. Have a fantastic day wherever you are, and we'll see you very soon. Let's parlay, patrons. Well, and all of yous there. I see you, non-patrons. That's right. This is like a Patreon exclusive, but it's kind of not, but it kind of is. This is like a taster of what you get on the Patreon. And I'm here today with my boy,
Jeremy Cobb.
Yeah,
I thought
there
you were going to, for a second, I thought you were going to say my actual name. Jeremy Cobb, but. Oh, should I? You know what? Because this is kind of a special sort of pseudo episode, and I don't normally do nicknames for Patreon episodes, but we're releasing this publicly. Mm. I will bestow the very first nickname of honor. Currently the only nickname of honor. It happened so long ago, months ago, but shout out to Precious.
Oh, yeah.
My nickname is The Avatar, The Last Airbender Netflix movie, because it culminates the emotions that she went through to get to the point of earning the nickname of honor. This was after correctly answering which film the quote, "You're weak. You are always weak. You'll always be weak until you take control," comes from. I'm not going to reveal what movie that is from. If you know, then you know. Precious knows. She figured it out and she earned the nickname of honor. Well done, Precious.
Well done, Precious.
From me, The Avatar, The Last Airbender Netflix movie.
Which your could friend. Or could not be trash.
Yes, just a complete up and down emotional roller coaster. Who knows?
Yep. Yeah, who knows? Who knows? But we are here today to give you, for all of you who aren't patrons, a little taster into what the Patreon might hold for you, and for all of our patrons to do a deep dive into planning one-shots. We've been doing some one-shots recently. Jeremy did a one-shot over on the D&D official YouTube channel. I feel like we need a... Like that's very, very baller and very cool. And,
well, Jasper, we need an even bigger for your recent appearance on not another D&D podcast running a two-shot.
Yeah.
Not just a one-shot, a two-shot.
Yeah,
two for the price of one.
That was very cool. That was a cool thing that I did. It still feels a little bit surreal, like, to talk about. I'm like, did I do that? Is that a real thing?
If you would have told us this time last year, dude, that we... that I have a one shot on the official D&D YouTube page, and you ran a two shot with Nadpod. First of all, I don't think you knew what Nadpod was a year ago, but
I would have been like the hell out of every single episode because I was like, I love this a lot.
Yeah, Nadpod's great. If you haven't listened to Nadpod, go do it.
Yeah,
go
it's
do
great. It is really great.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah, it's wild. Matt Mercer followed me on Twitter off of the back of that two shot.
Yeah, which tells us several things. Number one, it's only a matter of time before we get Matthew Mercer on our show.
Oh my
and number
God.
Two, Matthew Mercer is clearly a wise man because he's a fan of Nadpod.
Yeah, for sure. And that seems like that's nice. I liked that bit of information. Do you know what I mean? Like, I liked knowing that, like, even at the top, these guys are all just like, hey, I'll listen to that thing. I'll support that thing. I'll be, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's really, really cool. Because I feel like we've seen a lot of that with, like, shows that we support and that we like and whatever. And, like, it's nice to know that happened. That's happening all the way at the, you know, at the summit of the TTRPG community, which literally upon the summit sits Matthew Mercer. Like, let's be real. You know,
he like, has more Twitter followers than D&D does.
This dude is more popular than D&D. Like, it's just true. So, yeah, we thought we'd get together and talk about one shots. They're a strange beast, Jeremy. And I was kind of, I've got a few like oft criticisms that I thought we could go through as well and kind of unpick a little bit, which I thought would be interesting to do later. But I want to throw over to you. Let's talk about this YouTube one shot a little bit, because this, correct me if I'm wrong, two of the players hadn't played D&D before.
One of them had never played D&D at all.
One of them
the other one had played a little bit. Joel was the one who'd never played before. Yami had played, but her memory about it was very, very hazy, and she was not super experienced. And I don't think she'd played for well over a year, possibly years. Josh had played a fair amount. Josh is a big D&D fan, so they were quite knowledgeable about D&D in contrast to the other two. But my goodness, all three of them took to it like fish to water. Like, whoa.
So you were pleasantly surprised by the
I wasn't just pleasantly surprised. I was like legit blown away, because this isn't just like some rando game. This is a public game for like entertainment purposes.
Sure.
And like, dude, one move that absolutely like blew me away, which to this day, small spoilers, was Joel used the spell Unseen Servant, which I've really only ever heard like Emily Axford use. And it seems to be more for like comedy / slight utility purposes. He used
it's
it in
more
like
of an RP type, you know,
I use it to do some like a task or something.
Yeah,
he
like
used it in a combat scenario to great effect. I was like, when he first cast the spell, I was like, and then he started using it, and I was like, whoa. This is great. I was so into it.
I just for everyone, if anyone who's not played with Jeremy before, when Jeremy really likes a move you've done, it's one of the most rewarding experiences you'll have in your TTRPG life. Like when Jeremy is like down for an idea or like a thing that you've done, it's a very like, it feels like when your dad goes, huh, good joke, son. It's like, I just feel warm inside. This is fucking great.
I'm a very stern father DM.
Yeah. It takes a lot to impress Jeremy, but when you do, my God, does it feel nice.
Very emotionally distant, give very little positive reinforcement, but whenever I do, it really counts.
Yeah. And you usually drop an inspiration or something, so that's always nice. Okay, cool. So I think actually this isn't entirely dissimilar to a lot of people's experiences at running what usually starts out as a one-shot and then becomes a campaign, right? Because I think it's quite a common trend where you'll get like an experienced DM like yourself who has a group of friends. They want to play Dungeons & Dragons. They say, hey, to their group of friends, like, I'd love to run a little one-shot for you guys, see if you like it, etc. And so, and the key if you want to continue that, is to make sure it's got a compelling story. Yeah. You know, you've got a few beats that you want to hit, etc. And so I don't feel like it's actually going to be entirely dissimilar to what a lot of our viewers or listeners, sorry, experience when like starting a campaign. So yeah. Question.
I have a few things actually to say about what you just said.
Yeah, yeah. No, go for it.
I'm about 99% sure that is how the show Critical Role started, which is it was originally a game for Liam's birthday, a one shot for Liam's birthday that Matt ran. And then they turned it into an ongoing campaign. And then eventually I think Geek and Sundry approached them and were like, hey,
the most profitable one shot of all time.
and
like, what a birthday present.
It's true. And my very first the very first D&D session that I ever DM'd was originally meant to be a one shot, and then everybody had so much fun that we were like, let's keep doing it, and so it became a campaign. Like the I think there's a difference, because I think for a lot of people they're like, oh, a one shot, it's just like you have to run and do a task, it's a dungeon crawl, you know, it's something like, it's usually more about the task rather than the story of the characters. Like, it's the plot of navigating this place rather than or solving whatever problem is going on, rather than the characters themselves having arcs. But because of the way that I was introduced to D&D, which for the most part was through Dimension 20, like I played it once and then watched a lot of D20. And one thing that really stuck out to me about like Fantasy High, which was still in the process of airing at that point for the first time, was that every single character had an arc.
Yes.
It was every single character had an ongoing character arc that mattered. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, OK, this is how you play. You give everybody an arc. And so when doing one shots, I try my best to help everyone build their characters. Now, you don't have to do it this way, but for me, I find it to be a more rewarding experience for me and the people that I've played with, to work with them to flesh their characters out just that little bit more, so that when we actually play, their characters have like emotional goals that can be fulfilled. So the very first one shot I ever ran, that was kind of what happened. And then with this one shot, everybody had a goal that they had. Like Sherlock was a disgraced ex-cop who desperately wanted to gain legitimacy either as a private detective or as a police officer again. Theodemar had lost his whole family. They had all been killed, and he wanted to get revenge on the people who had done that. Siora wanted to protect and preserve the forest, which was having all sorts of problems. And all three of them got some version of what they wanted by the end, which I think made it much more satisfying for them as players, and also just in a public sense, I think more satisfying for the audience, because you actually have a story to follow.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that is a hard balance to hit, right? When you have to service three or so characters, and like I guess the slight difference, or the big difference, is with like a home one shot versus like an entertainment one shot like we've been doing, is that like with a home one shot, you're probably not going to have like that super hard out. Or even if you do, you could be like, oh, do you want to catch up next week and we'll finish this off or whatever. Whereas you definitely don't have that like luxury.
This needs to be 2 hours long.
Yes, like, exactly. Yeah.
Well, here we go.
So my first question about this one shot you did was, how do you go about bringing new players in and kind of immediately giving them that like that kind of almost like serotonin like hit of character arc, story, you know, kind of getting them like invested straight off the bat? Like, what's your do you have like a secret sauce? For me,
the closest thing to a secret sauce would be character creation. It has to start with character creation. You have to help. I think if a person I think for most people, if you play like RPG video games, one of the most fun parts of any game that allows you to create a custom character is the process of creating that custom character, because you're building all this potential. You're like, what do they look like? How tall are they? What race are they? What kind of character are they going to be? And like, all, you're creating all of like. you're narrowing some options, but in the process of doing that, you're creating so many others. And
yes. And you're investing as you're doing that, right? Because
yes.
you're making all these little micro decisions and you have agency over all of those decisions, which is then overall just increasing your, you know, want to see this character become the kind of, like you said, fulfill their potential and become this hero or, you know, or whatever, however you imagine them, you know, being. You know?
Yeah. And really where that kicks in, not just like, okay, picking the race, that can be really complicated. I usually approach picking a race being like, I say, especially if they haven't played before, I'll be like, okay, so do you want to be big, medium, or small? And then like, depending on that, we can go from there. And like, okay, do you want to hit things? Do you want to use spells? Or do you want to use some kind of a mix of the two? That's usually like how I break down the classes as well. Because to some degree, a person can like customize things. If they make a choice that they don't like early on, you can always change things down the line. Really where it digs in is when it's like, okay, let's talk about your backstory. Where are you from? And every single character backstory in that one shot was created by the characters, or excuse me, by the players. Like Joel had the idea, because he's a booktuber, he had the idea of having his character be aspiring librarian, aspiring celebrity librarian. That was what he wanted to be. He wanted to become a celebrity librarian.
That's amazing.
I'm like, that sounds cool to me.
That's so funny.
You want to avenge your family and also become a famous librarian at the same time. And Sherlock was, I mean, it's in the name. Sherlock Hawthorne, Sherlock, you get that this person wants to be a detective like this. But then Josh was like, OK, maybe I was working for a force and I had one good case that I had solved 30 years ago and have never solved a case since, but have been like just getting by bragging about that old case. And eventually they just threw me off the force. And I'm like, that sounds great. And they continue to like build that up. But that gives them a reason to be here and gives them a specific goal. And also tells you a lot about them as a person. Like this is the kind of person who's not necessarily the most competent officer and maybe not that great of a person if they're just bragging about stuff they did all that time ago. Also gives you an age range. This person's probably like in their 50s. So they've seen a lot. Like it developed. Yeah. And actually, we didn't even get to do a lot of this, but with Yami's character, Siora, she had a number of woodland friends that they made brief cameos. One of them, I think that is probably very confusing for anybody who just watches the episode but has no idea about the backstory, is originally a human who got polymorphed into a raccoon, but somehow maintained the ability to speak common. And so he was the one who had taught Siora common, because Ciara was like orphaned and grew up in the woods.
Wow.
So this talking raccoon appears at the end of the one shot trying to give her character advice. And I think he almost dies or something. It was really random. But like that stuff is how people get invested. Is like it as soon as you give them the opportunity to add their own creativity to the character beyond just you get these options. And it's something they choose something to care about. It's so easy to then get them to care about what's happening because they already told you they want to care about this. And it's like, cool. Well, you find out that the forest you love is in danger, or this, you spy an opportunity for a case. You can finally have a success, Sherlock, or you realize that the people who are involved with messing with this forest may be connected to the people who hurt your family. And also there's a library here and you could get in with the librarians. It's so easy to get a person to care about something if they've already told you they care about it. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a very valid point that you're, especially with one shots, like finding yourself the kind of simplest hook and point of reference for a character is definitely like, just lean into that, go for that. Like, because you're not going to be able to achieve the kind of complex emotional arcs of like a full campaign. So find like, what is at the crux of their character? What is going to be the most rewarding thing for them to achieve or to do in this very limited amount of time that we have? have. Because the game of D&D, it's worth mentioning, is geared towards campaigns. Like that is the way that it works. It's the reason why combat usually takes as long as it does. It's because they, you know, there's the if you have a big combat, realistically, that's probably going to take you 1.5 to 2 hours.
Yeah.
Unless you fudge some stuff or you just, you know, you have like instant win conditions and things like that.
Or like it's a real easy combat.
Yes, or it's just a really easy combat. Yeah, exactly. And so like the game is geared towards this longer, more drawn out like arcs and like quest based stuff.
Yeah.
And so I do think it that not being hard on yourself and not worrying about like, oh, is this going to be like the, does this feel like really obvious or really, no. Players will be so enamored by like the world you've created and the thing that they've just been dropped into and all these new sights and sounds and smells and whatever that you're throwing up to them. They will absolutely want to just get in there and invest. And I guarantee you no one else at that table is going to be thinking like, oh, right, that seems like really obvious. Like I'm a detective and there's a case. Like that's just, it wouldn't happen. Do you know what I mean?
What, you gave me the thing I wanted?
Ugh. Yeah.
Oh, so
God,
obvious.
How obvious. Yeah, 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 exactly. So why don't we just quickly then pivot a little bit into just...
Well, before we pivot, I actually did want to throw out, because I think if you are a person running at home, it's important to specify or to clarify. You don't have to, if this is going to be like... If it's a one shot, you don't have to put so much pressure on yourself to try and give every single person a complete arc.
Yes.
You can at some point, if you, especially if you're potentially thinking about turning this into a longer campaign, just hint at elements from certain people's backstories. Mm-hmm. And like, and even if you don't resolve the overall issues, that hint will give them enough of like to enough to be like, ooh, I matter. And this is also interesting. Yeah, yeah. There's intrigue here. Like it adds some spice.
Yes, some
tasty
seasoning.
Spice.
But that's that. But I think that I would almost say that for the most part, I would actually say avoid trying to give them a full arc. I think what we were saying then is like you'd picked up. Okay, right. The forest. It's not going to be safe forever. Do you know what I mean? Like, just because you've done this one thing, the forest is now not like safe from all evil. This one case that you've done doesn't complete your arc you are now not like a full blown investigator who will just do what it would be hired to
investigate
stuff.
You're probably going to have more cases down the line.
You're probably going to have more cases, etc. So I think that, absolutely take pressure off of yourself in that like you can absolutely just fit elements of what you have planned or ideas that you have to then fit like work with your players. Like there's you can easily just tweak stuff so that it then like, okay, this is like a little plot hook for them. This is a little plot hook for them. This is a little plot hook for them. And it is absolutely just about listening to your players and understanding like what is their character like about? What do they do? This actually, I was going to segue on to talk a little bit about combat, but I actually wanted to talk quickly, just because this feels like a right time to do it, about a common criticism I see of generally of like entertainment pods in general, but also of one-shots very specifically, which is that a lot of people get frustrated, I think, because I think it's like Matt Mercer comes onto this criticism quite a lot, which is like telling players how they feel. And I think this is a really interesting one, and I'd love to get your input. For me, for my money, what this is that quite often when you are sat around, like as a DM, you have to use all of the tools to your disposal, all the tools you have to your disposal to create a world, an environment, and stakes and emotions, etc. And it can be hard to do, especially in a situation where, like, maybe your players are in a very goofy mood, or maybe your players are, you know, just some of the people are distracted, or whatever it may be. And for me, there are two people that know your characters very, very well. And I'm not talking about, like, saying, this is how you feel, this is what you do. That absolutely not. But I don't see a problem. And in fact, I know that this is something that I do because I think that it helps my players. And I like it when the DM tells me. I trust my DM. And I hope, as a DM, my players trust me. That when I say, like, you know, you feel a cold shiver run down your back and you suddenly feel like there is like threat and danger here and you feel a little scared or a little bit like, huh, because I know that character and I know the kind of situations where they're likely to be scared or they're likely to be you know, concerned. And for me, that immediately as a player makes me go, okay, shit, I need to focus up. I need to, like, you know what I mean? So it gives me the ability to, as a player, to immediately drop into stakes without my DM having to do like a 20-minute rant about like the way that the ice starts to form on the windows and the you know, you see a you know, you like, you know, I mean, there is only so far that like description or music or whatever can get you. Whereas I think if you trust your DM and you trust your players, giving them, it's because it's not like a huge thing. It's like a one sentence little, hey, I think that your character, you know, looks over this grand vista, having achieved the thing that they have always wanted to achieve, and you feel this overwhelming sense of pride. I don't think there is anything wrong with like helping your player get into that moment and feeling the sense of like grandeur in that moment, or feeling, do you know what I mean? I'd be interested to know to bring it to what we're talking about. In one shots, I think for me that tool is imperative, because you absolutely need to be able to be like, hey, we're dropping into like scene after scene after scene, and I need you to like come with me on like what's going on in this scene tonally, etc.
I think it depends on the player, and it also depends on like what you're actually telling them they feel. Because I think that one thing that that most people would never have an issue with is if you say you feel a chill run down your spine, because that doesn't necessarily tell somebody an emotion. It tells somebody a physical sensation, which can trigger an emotion. And I think that with some people, they're okay with you telling them their emotions, but with other people, they may prefer the sensation, which triggers how they then get to choose how to respond to it. I think that needs to be, that's going to vary from player to player.
Yeah,
I think agree. Though that you can always, like, for example, at the end, if you mentioned the grandeur, if it's like you feel the warmth and the, I don't know, what I might say is like, I think you would feel a sense of pride. Would you agree? And they might, like, if you get them in on it. Yeah, I would say that. I think in terms of one shots, yeah, it's better to it's very effective to describe sensations no matter what. So smells, even senses, like you get a sense of foreboding from this place. You feel like someone's watching you. Like that might be more effective than say you feel paranoid.
Oh, definitely, of course. Yeah, I think if you can find a but I guess like as well, it's just like being and having that level of like descriptiveness and eloquence and stuff like doesn't always come in the moment, right? Like there's definitely been moments where I as a DM have been like, you know, we've been going for 3 hours. I'm absolutely fucking exhausted. You're scared.
Gotta
right
come
now.
Up with something.
Do you know what I mean? Like you're feeling scared. This place is creepy as fuck. Like just help me out and be scared. You know what
Please
I mean?
Be afraid. Just
Please
do
be
it.
Afraid.
This is actually something that I've been wanting to put into practice that I haven't put into practice, but I've heard from multiple other DMs that I think is a great idea, which is to write down the five senses.
Yeah.
Like, so that I always can look, like, whenever somebody goes into some place, I can choose at least, like, two of the senses two that we're engaging. So not just what it looks like, but maybe what the temperature is like, or what they hear, or what it smells like, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I enjoy temperature a lot. I've used that one. That one feels very effective and evocative for like a lot of the things I've done. Like I enjoy being like, you know, the air becomes like hot and close and thick. And do you know what I mean? I just think it's like a very evocative feeling of like feeling... like if I want to invoke a sense of like claustrophobia or something, like I'm like, you know, that like being in like a hot, sweaty place where you feel kind of uncomfortably, it feels uncomfortable to be close to people, like that kind of sense, I think is.
Or it starts to get harder to breathe because of how warm it is.
Exactly that. And so, and I just think it's a very interesting thing where, I think it's an interesting thing to level criticism at, where I'm like, if you're like, without knowing the player DM relationship, I feel like it's very hard to like criticize Matt Mercer for doing that when like the players might have openly said like, I enjoy it when you do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And again, for one shots and things, like using those kinds of things of being like, I need for this scene to work fundamentally, I need a complete tonal shift from our last scene. So like you're going to need to like flag In some way, and sometimes in a way where, like, I've only got half an hour left before we all have to jump off, mm-hmm. you know, I'm gonna guide this a little more and be like, yeah. this is the sort of general sensation and feeling that you're having right now. The players yeah. can then choose to overcome that or, I'm never gonna
yeah,
fight
choose
them
how
on
they're
it.
Gonna respond.
Do you know what I mean? I'm never gonna fight them on it and say, no, this is how you're feeling. Never at all. But, like, I'm offering them, like...
You feel very sad. No, I feel like I'm okay. Probably okay that no, you feel really,
really
sad.
But, like, saying, like, an overwhelming... You know, like a sensation
a sense of
like
dread
or sorrow sweeps over you. Because yeah. then you can choose for that to be a sweeping, fleeting thing, or mm-hmm. you can lean into that and it gives you the all it is for me is giving your players like an extra little plot hook for mm-hmm. their character, an extra little like sensation for their character. And normally I use it to describe something they can't physically see yet. Mm-hmm. You know, like if a character has died off screen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm like, this feeling of sadness washes over you.
Yeah. Or
and
loss.
You don't know why. Or loss or whatever. You know what I mean? I think that's like a very evocative and useful.
Yeah. I think it really depends on the, yeah. Like bottom line is if the players are having fun, then you're doing a good job.
Yes.
So
that's always the, the bottom line. I'll be honest.
Yeah. And everything.
If everyone at your table is having fun, you're doing a good job.
Like. And that was why I was saying that it really depends on the player because some players do. In fact, actually in the campaign that we're recording now, there was a moment where I described actually the feelings of a PC, but it was an adjunct PC, and the PC who normally oversees that adjunct PC was actually like, actually, no, that's not what happens. This is what happens. And I was like, yeah. All right, cool. That's what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that was absolutely fine. And that wasn't a moment of weirdness or whatever. And that was just like again, it goes back to trust. Like they fully trusted that they could do that. And they could just mm-hmm. be like, no, this is what happens. And you were like, trusted them that whatever they chose to do instead was still truthful and honest and in the moment and whatever else, you know?
Yeah. And I think also I do tend to lean away from trying to describe a person's emotional response, if only because the more you prescribe things, perhaps the less opportunity for surprise there is. For example, in the episode that we just recorded of this upcoming campaign, there was a moment at the end in which things got a little ominous you had a response which was perhaps a bit more direct than what I would have anticipated, but it wouldn't have made sense for me to not let you do it. And actually, I had prepared for that contingency just in case.
Yeah, you played a little too well, if you ask me. I will gold stars for anyone who's listening to this later point or remembers this when they do end up listening to this particular episode. If you can point out the moment this is, it's a pretty obvious moment.
It's going to be episode five.
Yes, you'll absolutely know when this happens.
Yeah. It's a fun time. But yeah, I think when it comes to one shots, the thing to keep, I think it's always good to communicate with your players about what they want. But that's with any campaign, just like to find out what kind of campaign they might want, what they might be into. So in the case of like the YouTube one shot, it was I think the D&D were like, hey, it might be a good idea to make it in like a version of the Forgotten Realms. And I'm like, okay, am I allowed to like homebrew a few things or, you know, alter? And they're like, yeah, dude, go for it. Because, you know, it's kind of what they're made for. So it was a version of the Forgotten Realms. And it was like, maybe they suggested sticking to the core races just to keep things simple. And I was like, all right, cool. And we stuck it with low level. And then I went with the players as well. And essentially from there, like the players were in on that whole conversation, even though they weren't present for it. I think they were kind of informed about it.
Right.
And so from there, it was like, cool, we have the game. And I'm pretty sure when NADPOD approached you, they specifically requested, didn't they say Band of Boobs? Didn't they want to do a Bohemia?
Yeah. It was Band of Boobs, but not Bohemia. They didn't request Bohemia. They just said, you can drop the Band of Boobs at any level into any place that you want.
Right. Okay.
Pretty much. And I was like,
cool. So they came to you with what they wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you already knew their characters from having listened to
hundreds
of hours.
Hours and hours. Like, I guess at least I say around 200 hours of
neighborhood,
an hour and a half to 2 hours per episode, and there's 100 episodes of the first campaign, so
plus one shots. Let's not forget all those Donkey
short
Kong
rests,
those Kong Islands.
Oh man, so funny, Funky Kong, man. Wow.
Yeah, but this is ridiculous.
This is ridiculous. I said that solidly for like 2 weeks after that, listening to that bloody one shot.
But this is
couldn't
ridiculous.
Stop saying
this
it.
This is ridiculous.
Because I used to say like, oh, ridiculous. Yeah. But then I would be like, oh, this is ridiculous. Oh, no, damn it. It's just such a like nervous twitch after that like 2 weeks. It was super annoying.
The other thing that I was going to throw out is the level, the level of planning that one might do for a one shot. Because the amount of planning that I do for any given session has really changed. I've talked about this over the years. The very first one shot that I ever ran, I had two full adventures planned, depending on which way they wanted to go. And I even had contingencies for how the two adventures could lead into each other if they made specific choices within those adventures. Whereas now I pretty much have a beginning. I go into any given session, but even including one shots I know where the beginning is. I know roughly where the end is supposed to be. I know what the story is, what they do within that. I will create like a few NPCs to help that I could just call upon, and I'll have like a list of names and whatnot that I can build from. But in terms of how these different people get introduced, in terms of what exactly gets used, it's up to you guys. And I try not to over plan anymore, because I would say over planning is more useful for a full campaign, because you can just use a bunch. You can just take the excess that you don't use and stick it in later.
I would still say, like, even with over planning, though, I feel like you have to be a very flexible DM when you over plan, because it can be then very daunting and difficult when you spent so long planning something and things will not go the way that you want it to go. So like, if you're a very flexible DM, then plan your heart out, because then you'll have the ability, because then you'll have the ability to just change on a dime and gonna go, okay, that NPC is not gonna be there, I'm gonna put them in like, you know, if they're heading in that direction, I can put them in the next town, or I can, that treasure, do you know what, they said something really, really cool and I wasn't gonna give them that treasure until like then, but I'll give it to them now because it feels like more of a heroic moment than something that I might have planned later on down the road, and that kind of thing. But if you're someone who struggles to kind of veer off of that, then I would say like generally plan less so that you can feel a little bit like I'm not ruining or scuppering any plans that I've got down the road, etc. So I think be less preemptive is what I'm kind of trying to say by plan less. Just be less prescriptive and preemptive. Just sort of like you can sit back and go like, okay, I'm just going to see how this plays out before I then structure the next part of this campaign or whatever it may be.
I wanted to ask actually what we just released. Obviously people are still probably the NADPOD two shot has not yet ended, I think, at the time of this release, or maybe it just did. I was going to ask about both then, because two one shots that have come out for you this past week from the recording.
Literally, it just dropped on my
literally
on my phone. It's
okay,
literally
cool.
Just dropped the NADPOD two shot. So
these two, one of them we ran back in like March.
Sure, it was a while ago, yeah.
And the other one, obviously, you just recorded a few weeks ago with the NADPOD crew. Can you walk us through your planning process for both the Once Upon a One Shot and the NADPOD two shot?
Yes,
which was originally a one shot.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, I'm going to, just for a heads up for patrons and stuff, I'm going to do a little deep dive on the Once Upon a One Shot with the amazing Goblin Snack. It was her idea. She'd submitted it on the Patreon as an idea, and then it got voted on by the patrons, and that was what we selected. And so I thought, once people have listened to it and stuff, I'll do a little deep dive. So if you want to hear more about that, then there will be an episode at some point soon. I'll start off with that one, which was that the brief that Goblin Snack had put on the Patreon when she suggested the idea was, okay, what it was like was to get away from these kind of typical tropes and things like that. you know, what would it be like if new or lesser known fantasy creatures were like on an adventure to gain some sort of, you know, notoriety in the world. Yeah. And from there, I was like, right, what is, my strength as a DM, I definitely know for sure, is in world building. I feel like, you know, I'm not bad at running and doing all that, and, you know, but like if I can create a world and a framework for myself, then like that's, I feel like, where I do best. And so it was starting out figuring out, okay, what's a framework where I can reward my players for doing cool stuff and trying to gain notoriety? Mm-hmm. And so that is where the whole kind of idea of belief crystals came from, and the book as it is written.
You created a whole mechanic for that.
Yeah, and I sat down with the players, and I won't give any spoilers if you haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, but like I sat down with all the players and said, like, okay, can you come up with like one, or like an idea for like one really fun, unique ability that your character could have or that might get at a certain level of power? From there, I basically created this mechanic, which, you know, had worked to varying degrees of success, because this was something else I was going to bring up on this topic, which is this: stuff's gonna go wrong on your one shot and you'll be like, meh, I could have done that better, but it's a one shot, do you know what I mean? And yeah. So like you'll definitely look back and be like, I would have much preferred if I'd have said that in that moment. But it's like those are the moments you get when you get into like session 10 of your campaign, you know, when you're really settled in and you're embedded with your players, and you know it's just not something you could ever hope to get doing a one shot. Like you can never hope to get that seamlessly smooth sensation that you do when you get to like session 10 of a campaign and you go, damn, that was a good surge. You know what I mean? That was a good fucking like session. You know what I mean? Like
honestly, even that can be pretty fleeting, because it's like,
yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, even that, it's a very rare thing, but it's like you get it like you know what I mean, session 10, you'll have that one golden session, you know what I mean?
Where you get into much more of a groove, the more everybody else knows their characters, the more you get to know the world, all that stuff. You get to start bringing in stuff maybe that you had planned a few sessions ago, and it's like, ha-ha!
Yeah, you get to bring something back that's been building up for a while, all of that
kind of
stuff.
Oh, that just happened, dude. This is a very, very, very short tale from the table, because I'm not going to go into details, because people from that game listen to this show. But there was a reference in the gothic horror/noir campaign that I've been running for like all of this year, started last year. There was in like session 2, there was a reference to like a vicious murder that had occurred in like part of the city. And no one ever followed up on it. And it was like in the newspaper, and people didn't even continue reading newspapers really.
Wow.
And it wasn't until the past session that somebody was looking something up and then was like, it came back to that earlier murder that had actually been part of a string of murders that are all attributed to one person that they never really found. Like the police never found this person, but they're called the Smiling Slaughterman. And like there's like a serial killer essentially
who had
existed that. Yeah, it has now been mentioned again in a completely different context. And now it's like, wait a minute. And that was great. You know, shout out to Leo, fan of the show. She was the one person who multiple times had been hanging out with me, just had been like, we never did look into that one thing. And then in that moment, she was like, I knew it. I knew it. It's back. I knew it was important. I was like, yes, this is good.
But that's a perfect example of that like golden session, right? And but I think that there is a temptation to want one shots to go like that, and they will not. It's impossible. Mm-hmm. It's literally impossible. Like we said, it's like it's hours and hours and hours and hours of like you as a group of storytellers getting into a groove and a rhythm and a thing for then all of the stars to align, which also can be like non-D&D related stars of just like people's moods going into a session and all kinds of like how engaged they are, all kinds of stuff like that, that will then lead to that thing. And so I can't remember why exactly we were talking about that particular thing, but I'm sure it's all relevant, which is good.
Yeah, something to do with
with, I don't even, planning. You just planning, generally the planning, one shot and building. Oh, it was not being able to incorporate everything. And sometimes, like, I think that was what it was.
Yes. And then so, yeah, that was it. And so building in this, like, mechanic and this idea, I really like, especially when I'm running, I was running a game for Caldwell, who'd played for many years with the NADPOD and had and had done a full, like 2-level 20 arc of a character. Connie, who's a very experienced a DM / GM, yourself, Unati, very experienced players, GMs, you know, and so I was really keen to add something in that you might not have had before, you know, like throw in a new mechanic just to add a sense of freshness and excitement and whatever. Not only that, we were playing like homebrewed races and things like that. And so this was actually quite an interesting one where I approached this and knew it was going to be more of a railroaded story, because what was more important for me was that you as individual characters had moments to shine. And I was like, if I build in like a very kind of linear story, then hopefully the players will have then more individual moments to do their thing. Mm-hmm. Whereas like, if I let this be sandbox, we might not go to areas that suit certain players and people in certain ways. At least that was my aim. You know, whether I achieved that or not is entirely up to, you know, the listeners, and I'm absolutely fine with, you know, them deciding whether it did work.
I mean, everyone
or didn't
involved
work.
Had fun. So
Exactly. So it was an interesting one for me, where I definitely railroaded that story on purpose a bit more than I would normally with a one shot. But it was because I wanted to make sure that we like hit all of these beats with each of these characters, and we had a moment to show off what each character could kind of do, and like their a bit about their kind of like origin and all of that kind of thing. And I hopefully I think that kind of worked. And so then the whole Jamal and Tasha thing came out of just like, I really wanted it to just feel like a really folksy story, like a real kind of genuine, like, you know, we're sitting down by the fireplace to tell a story. I just kind of liked that setup and vibe, and I wanted to kind of involve the DM like a little bit more in that, like, and actually have it. And so I think like on the poster and stuff, I even had myself listed as like the storyteller as opposed to like the GM or the DM. And then I really like the idea that there's like a little demi plane where creatures hang out until they're called, you know, into action to go and play. I just thought it was a kind of a fun fun idea. I liked the idea of orcs getting back from battle and whatever and being like, oh god, I need to go detox.
We actually played in a version another setting, actually, like a one shot this past, was it last week, that had a slightly similar setup.
Oh yes, it did. Yeah. It was a very different feel.
It's a good idea.
But it's a good idea. It's a very fun idea. It's a very like, and it was a way that I could then really play around with the tropes as well, which was another big aim for me. And in the spirit of what Goblin Snack had suggested, was trying to play around and flip and subvert, like racial tropes and stereotypes and stuff, which we often talk about on the show. And then in contrast to that, I feel like the NADPOD one was a very different planning experience, in that, like you said, I was like a fan of the show. I knew the characters like the back of my hand. And then for me from there, it was like, okay. And then I think I said this on the short rest. So apologies if anyone's listened to that and I'm repeating myself, but I was really keen for me. I'm not a big fan of prequels. It's got to be like a spectacular prequel to like really hook me, in that, like, if I know that I know where we're kind of going to end up, it loses a sense of stakes and fun and et cetera for me. And so I'm like, okay, it's fun, but it's not like the next thing. What it was for me as a player, I went, where would I love to see the Band of Boobs go next? Where would I love to, as a fan of the show, where would I love to see them? what would I love to see of them? And it was like, I want to know mm-hmm. what they're up to now. I want to know what they're, you know, I want to know what this group is going around, you know, as level 20 heroes and just putting out fires. And, you know, like, I was just kind of like, that could
What's
be
the
fun.
Campaign after their campaign after the campaign?
Absolutely. And so it was about offering something new and fresh and then working within the parameters of like their level 20 characters. Mm-hmm. And not
just level 20 characters, but like monstrously beefed, powerful,
beefed up level 20.
Even
characters.
As level 20 characters go.
Yes.
Like, good night.
I felt that for anyone who has listened to part two already.
Yeah. I try this Jasper and I because I was in while Jasper was preparing for this. I kept telling him how strong they were because he hadn't listened to the end of the campaign
and
yet.
Then I sent you some live reaction pictures of me
and when I was telling you you were like yeah no it'll be fine it'll be fine. Like, bro you don't understand
you don't understand
and then finally when you listen to it
how
like,
much
oh,
damage yeah. is able to be done and I think this is the only well, I'll talk a bit about planning and then it will lead us nicely on to talking about combat, I think, because mm-hmm. there's something that I'd like to bring up there. But I'm the kind of person generally when it comes to working creatively, I love parameters. And I think one of the reasons why I struggled a little bit in terms of planning for my home game that you play in or played in, we're on a long hiatus at the moment. is that I made the world so broad and open and like, therefore it just feels a little unspecific to me or a little general. And I find it hard then to like hone in on like the smaller story. Whereas I find if you put me in like a really small, like niche box of like, you have to work within these parameters. That's when I really feel like I can come alive creatively and come up with a really fun and creative solution. And so the whole point of them being shrunk down came out of, well, two things. A, I thought, hey, it'd be really funny to see what happens to Hard One if he gets shrunk down, because I feel like he might, that would be a funny scenario to put Hard One in if he was just suddenly really small. And then also, this is a very interesting mechanical way of me stopping the band of boobs from just steamrolling their way through any obstacle I put in front of them. Because suddenly there's like, you know, Karkar, for instance, can do a huge amount of damage to them, like, and could one hit kill any of them. You know what I mean? So it gave me a fun mechanical way of introducing stakes back into level 20 characters. And then not only that, like, it was a very easy then way of me adding. Adding a sense of like, okay, you have like a clear goal, you have a clear mission to achieve, et cetera, et cetera. And so with the NADPOD one, I definitely planned a much more open world vibe to that, in that like generally it was all going to end back into the same direction. But like once we'd gotten to a certain point, and if you've listened to it, you'll know where that certain point is. It was kind of just like, you can go this way, you can go that way, you can go this way. You'll end up getting back to the same point, but you can kind of go and do whichever one of those things takes your fancy. And that was fun. It was fun and I feel like it kind of worked, and it was less of a character driven thing. So I was like, do you know what, we've had their, we know their characters.
It was just a cool story.
Yeah, like, let's give them some fun NPCs to play around with. Let's give them some interesting plot hooks. Let's give them a bunch of lore to discover and a bunch of like little tidbits and information. And like, this is like a minor spoiler for part one. So don't listen for the next like 20 seconds or something if you haven't listened to it. But like, in fact, actually, I can do this without spoiling anything. There was a really nice moment of a player discovering a bit of lore, which I didn't think we would get to. And actually, there was a lot of it. And most of it was down to, you know, Emily was just a very generous player in that she really invested in the world and kept asking the right questions. And that was very satisfying for me. And hopefully it made it slightly more entertaining to listen to as well, because it kind of, my aim always was that I wanted them to be dropped into something that felt alive, living, and that would go on living when the Band of Boobs leave, and was there long before the Band of Boobs arrived. And it didn't just feel like, this you know, Kong, like a bit like the Donkey Kong one, like where like that was very obviously just like something we're doing. It's fun. It's, you know what I mean? But I wanted it, I wanted it to not feel like, oh, this island suddenly appeared out of nowhere and is now immediately gone. Now the band of boobs are no longer there. Like I want there to be like a life. And I feel like hopefully that came across, which, you know. However, the one slight downside, and this is something for me as a DM that I'm just working on, which is that I definitely feel like I'm still figuring out combat. And combat in one shots, I feel like, is even harder.
How so?
Because I think, well, for me anyway, normally you get to the big end fight towards the end of running the one shot. And so you're very conscious of time and things like that. And it's really hard. It's hard to balance because you don't really have the relationship with the players. You don't, you know, I guess I knew, I was blessed in that I knew a lot of the moves and stuff that the NADPOD crew might try. But like the Once Upon a One Shot combat we did, I got heavily whomped.
You could not have known though.
Yeah, exactly. I couldn't have known. But for me, I went in thinking, we're gonna lose some people. You know what I mean? I really thought like, because it, like, no spoilers, but realistically, you were level
five, I think.
Five?
I think we were five.
What I threw at you at the end,
yeah,
realistically should kill level five characters. Like,
yeah,
pretty
or come
easily.
Real close. Like, somebody's you know? Probably going to go down, yeah.
Or come real close.
And it almost happened.
Yeah,
didn't somebody,
exactly.
Didn't,
like,
didn't
level...
some people get smacked a little bit early on in that?
No.
Really?
No.
I thought there was like a sense of urgency
really
at first.
There was external factors, but weren't anything to do with you as players. Like you as players were fine. I think someone missed a turn. It's like basically what happened.
Oh no.
Like it was, there it like really was a whomping
was
for
it
the
me?
Ages.
Was it me? Because I pulled some ability out of my butt. Isn't that what it happened?
Yeah, but all of you did. All
this
of
true,
you did.
Yeah.
It,
all, yeah.
It was.
I remember
was,
doing something that was like, oh no.
Yeah, no, it was all, oh no. But yes, so because you don't have that kind of like rapport with the players and you don't understand certain things. And then for me, the NADPOD combat particularly for me was like an interesting one where I felt like, at the end we had a great time. It was a total blast, but I was like, there was a lot in there that I didn't like, or I wish it had done differently or whatever. And that was mostly down to trying to build in a combat that is rewarding and exciting, and but it's not going to drag on for ages. And then that coupled with the fact that, and this is a little peek behind the screen, this was only ever meant to be a one shot. This was never meant to be a two shot. I just planned too much and the session went on way longer than just like a one shot. They gave me permission. Like we got like, you know, an hour and a bit in and they were like, oh, we're loving this. Like just keep going until you, you know, you get to the end sort of thing. They were very chill about, and they were like, if we get two episodes, then that'd be amazing. Like that's not a problem. So I would kind of, I took my foot off of the gas sort of thing in that sense. But even then, we got to the combat and I was still like, okay, we do need to wrap up at some point. And it is just, I think it is just a difficult thing to immediately add stakes and threat and concern and all of that kind of thing whilst servicing this kind of very quick kind of glimpse at a story. You know what I mean? Like it, that, like the two shot that it is would have easily been like a 5 to 10 session arc had I had the time. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
And so therefore, like, you know, things like combats and stuff are always going to feel, I think, slightly underserved. You know what I mean? In that they don't come in with the same weight. And then there's always a slight like, okay, how much do I add into this combat? You know what I mean? Because everything you add in takes time. Layer actions take time. Environmental stuff takes a lot of time. You know, and so I ended up stripping a lot of that back, slightly to the detriment of the combat, I think. You know? I had a lot more kind of like environmental or like, you know, legendary actions and whatever else kind of worked in, which I then didn't get to because of, you know, time and getting to a satisfying ending and all of that kinds of thing. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Okay. I can kind of see where you're coming from there. I think for me, I usually assume that the players are going to win regardless of what I throw at them, unless I can just straight up counter what they're trying to do or do so much damage. Like I can counter what they're trying to do and also do so much damage that I'm taking them out one by one.
Sure.
Like barring just horrendous rolls on either my part or their part, which is kind of a common theme in these, a
three black halflings. That is pretty,
it's disgusting.
Consistent. It's pretty consistent. That was also part of the thing with the once upon a one shot combat, everyone made every single save bar one character.
Yeah.
And so like pretty much everything missed or didn't work or whatever. And then you all just rolled really well.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
In the upcoming, I think we've announced that we're doing Paradox Perfect. Oh, well, if we haven't, then we're announcing that we did a Paradox Perfect one shot and we can just cut this.
We'll find out
if it's in the episode or not.
Yeah.
But in the Paradox Perfect one shot, everybody rolled absurdly well. Absurdly well. And another example of a combat, this was not a one shot, well it could have been but it wasn't, was the original episode of the first episode of the Cub and the Caterpillar, in which I had 9 people making attacks on Muti, and I think 1 or 2 of them hit
with an AC of 11.
Yeah, that's just numerically really unlikely.
It's
like there's nothing you can do about that.
Practically impossible.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do about that.
No.
But in the case of like this, the one shot that I ran this past time, the YouTube one shot, that combat was actually originally going to be different. But because of what the players did, I was like, cool, I'm going to get rid of these other people that I had planned. And we don't actually have to include this other thing that I was trying to do. And then I ended up including it, I think, partway through the combat. I can't remember. I'd have to rewatch it. But it was like, for me, I made sure to design something that could, if it went really badly, be deadly. But even though it would probably be rated deadly, I knew that the players could win because challenge ratings, being what they are, most of my combats are deadly, and it's so rare that PCs die. If PCs die, it's because there were bad decisions made that led to really difficult, like tactical situations,
or just real bad rolls.
Real bad rolls have never caused the death of a character in one of my. One of my games, thankfully. It's always been like, oh, you lit the park you're fighting in on fire. Okay, yeah. Or, oh, you guys, for whatever reason, chose to spread out by like 60 plus feet. And so a couple of you get mobbed by 9 NPCs at once.
Yeah.
There's only so much you can do in a case like that.
There is only so much you can do. Yeah, because it is kind of, if you think about it, it's very rare actually that people, it's rare that people even complete death saves. You know what I mean? Like it's very rare that someone actually does 3 or, well, normally more death saves. Do you know what I mean? Like it's just very rare. So I think I think the real bad luck is like you get down and you roll a 1. You know what I mean? Like that's when you're like, okay, oh boy.
Yeah. It's like if somebody dies from death saves, it's usually because they die, they roll like a 1. Like it's usually like within 2 to 3 turns, I think.
Yes, they have to. I think you have to roll like a 1 and then under a 10 or vice versa.
Yeah.
And also I think most of the time that I know of or have seen or have played in where there's been PC death, it's normally just because the players can't do anything to stop that downed player taking damage.
Yeah.
That's usually what it leads to it. Like the one that we had was that the guy got down and then was still being constricted by snakes. So therefore they were still taking damage.
And I think we even got rid of the snakes once and then they summoned more. And I was like, well, there's not much we can do about this. Yeah, there was nothing to be done at that point.
There was nothing to be done. But I think I would... this is just generally like a thing that I think I'm still working on and developing as a DM. I think my strongest sides are in world building and role playing and stuff. And then combat, I still find tricky. I still find it's hard to balance. It can be hard to balance. It can be... it can be... it can be, when it's right, it really works and it flows and etc. And other times it's just like, I've got a bajillion fucking moving pieces going on here.
Yeah.
And like,
the other thing, I did want to interject. The other thing is, if you get whomped, that doesn't mean that your combat was too easy necessarily.
Oh no, hell no.
It could just be that your characters had some cool abilities that they broke out. Well, in that one shot that we just played in last week.
Oh, absolutely.
Could have been a much harder fight if not for some absurd rolls.
That's true, actually. I will reserve any... For me to say I got whomped would be a grievous understatement in face
compared
of...
Compared to that.
In the face of a whomping that was done upon a DM last week.
My goodness.
Word.
It just kept getting worse.
It really did. And it didn't help...
Oh my gosh.
It didn't help. Two of the characters, particularly mechanically, were absolute monsters.
Yeah,
like absolute just
and the other
horrible,
were high level spellcasters.
Horrible characters. I as a DM would not want to DM for those characters because it was
they were very very strong.
They slung a lot of dice.
In Cub and the Caterpillar, like there were a lot of whompings in that, but. It would vary. Like some of them, I'm like, cool, yes, want me. But then a lot of them, want me harder. the fight, for example, the fight on the cliff face. It doesn't matter if you guys mechanically are dominating that fight because there's always the threat of death because you're on the side of a cliff. So it doesn't matter if like you guys, in terms of the numbers, are dominating. It's a lot of it's about the feeling. Like you guys were scared. In the case of the big Nyati fight at the end, that was just a case of like, it just worked out.
Yeah, it just worked out.
Both sides got some real good rolls. Both sides got some poor rolls. There were good strategies involved.
I might go as far to say that was like a golden session. That combat was like a golden session. It was such a culmination of just it all came together in a very satisfying way, I felt.
Yeah.
But yes. And so I guess just to tie up this chat that we're having about one shots, and hopefully I feel like there's been some good stuff in there, and hopefully some useful
Time we record an episode, it's just the two of us. There's somebody's like, I feel like that was okay. This was acceptable, right?
That was acceptable, all right?
On air. Not even after. Like, while we're still talking. I feel like that was pretty good. People are going to enjoy some of that.
Yeah, maybe. Remember, give me that C+. That's all I want.
Please rate this show 5 stars on Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, please. Like and review. It really helps us. But no, to wrap this up, I think that... I think that this is my final thought that I would say about one shots is that they are intrinsically difficult because the mechanics and the general setup of the game is not built for them, you know? And so I think that there are certain things that you may not achieve in that, like trying to run like a very dead serious one shot, I think is going to be difficult. You know what I mean? Just because I think that things like levity and whatever help you move things along quickly and help you in a lot of scenarios kind of, you know, get things going. If you've got players doing, you know, monologues and you've got, you know, deep, powerful things and you're trying to kill off NPCs and, you know, it's just like that is very difficult to do in like 2 to 3 hours.
I think also just comedy is a really easy way to hook people in. Like if you are able to provide comedy, obviously if not everybody,
I would also say not necessarily even like brevity. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like just
even
having
levity.
Levity, sorry, not brevity. But levity,
make it as
is,
short as possible, please.
As short as possible. You go into a tavern, you have a beer. The end.
you make a single constitution saving throw to see how drunk you get.
See how drunk you get, and then we'll catch you next time, folks. but yeah, I know. I think levity is something that, like you said, it's a very easy way to hook people in. Plus, also, levity is just like a very easy way to get people attached to NPCs and things like that. If you have like overly serious NPCs who come in like, I am here to defend my honor, it's just like, okay. You know what I mean?
They better
just
be real cool if you want people to... invest in these super serious NPCs.
Yeah, like, but
actually, that just
like
happened in our
fun...
in the campaign we're recording now. There were a couple of very comedically oriented NPCs who showed up, and people, even though no one trusted them, just and it's really not because they didn't trust them, but they also just don't trust me.
Yeah. We do not trust Jeremy at all. The level of distrust for Jeremy is so strong. This campaign is ruined. Like, oh, honestly, I have to roll inside checks on Jeremy just generally now, even out of playing D&D. I just want to double check he's not planning something.
It's harmed my relationships with all of the
across
players.
Across the board.
Getting hate letters from the players, threatening. Anyway, yep. But yeah, it worked. Like, there, one of them in particular, there was a moment where you were like, I know it's out of character for me to talk to them, but can someone else talk to this character, please?
Please.
I want to know more about this guy.
I really want to know more about this character, but it would make no sense for my character to talk to them. Like, it would be a real shoehorned conversation.
Yeah. But what that means is that you were invested in that moment. You were like, 100%. I want to engage in this more.
100%.
And so if you are able to introduce, if you have those skills to introduce like more comical characters or just facilitate levity on behalf of the players, it is a really, really, really effective tool to get people into whatever it is you're trying to do.
Absolutely.
Like immediately.
Absolutely.
And people love laughing.
Yeah, and I lent into that like hell with the NADPOD one. So I was like, do you know what? If there's one way I can do this, I know a lot of the in-jokes, so will the audience, so let's do it, you know? And like that really helped. And it helped me as well, just being like nervous, being like, I'm doing this one shot. This feels, you know, like a big deal, and I'm gonna settle myself down with some laughs. And do you know what? Even DMing home games, like, it is daunting at times. You know, it is.
Yeah.
You know, you're laying yourself bare. This is your work. This is your, you know, a lot of effort and whatever has gone into this. And the last thing you ever want is to go in feeling like, oh, I don't really, you know, I hope this is good. You know what I mean? Like, you want, because you are an empathetic person who wants to, you know, do cool, like a cool thing for your friends and et cetera.
Yep.
So I think I think that levity is definitely a very, very good, solid tool to use in this instance. I completely agree. Any final thoughts on like one shots?
Essentially a one shot, I would the easiest way I'd describe it is you run it like you're running the first session of a campaign, but you just do less planning. That's it. You don't have to do as much world building. But you work with the players. You maybe don't need as extensive backstories, but it's good to have a little bit in there. Maybe a 1-2 sentencer. That's something that can be summarized in 1-2 sentences.
Yeah.
I think you just do less world building, but maybe leave the potential, depending on the certain scenario, but the potential for more if people want it. That's what I would say.
I was actually thinking about this in terms of like home stuff, because I was thinking about the main campaign stuff that I'm running and the setting and everything like that. And I was like, the more I've done this and the more I've gotten into this, the more I'm like, oh, I really wish I'd done something more unique and more, because like there's just more stuff that interests me now as the DM, as opposed to doing like a very like straight fantasy kind of setting. Mm-hmm. And I was even thinking to myself like, I wonder if, like, next time, or if I was to, like, if we were to rejig things a little bit, whether I would even suggest, like, having those characters, and we do, like, 1 or 2 or 3 one-shots to, like, test out a world or an idea of a world,
that could be,
and
really
then see what people vibe with, you know what I mean? So, like, I'll come in, and we won't do too much world-building for the characters so that I can just drop you in and see how you enjoy it, and then from there, if everyone really likes a particular setting, we'll then do the kind of character world-building, we'll get your backstories involved, we'll do all of that, and I'll then flesh it out and plan it out more. But, I don't know. Maybe try it and see how it goes. And again, you don't have to do a whole lot of planning for this. It's just like, give us a sense and a flavor of this world and what it might look like and how it might go down. And then maybe see if people, which one people really enjoy and vibe with and whatever. Because I feel like, again, that'd be a great way to like instantly invest your players in it.
Because
they picked it. And then not only that, like, it would just be a fun way for you to try some ideas out. you know, because that's something I really want to do now. Like, and I think that I probably will do more with my like home game stuff. It's just like, hey, you know, do you guys have time to get together? Because I really want to try out a thing, like an idea that I have. You know, because like now that I've done superhero stuff and horror stuff, I'm like, I want to do that. Like, that's way more interesting for me than just like, I am an adventurer on a journey. Not to say that that is bad at all. That is very rewarding. And like, my word, would I love to, you know, I'd love to play in it. It's just for me as a DM, when I'm world building and I'm coming up with stuff, I'm now like, I've now created Potsidonia. I've now created the book as it is written. Like, so just very unique feeling. Well, hopefully unique feeling worlds and settings and stuff.
This is the most generic thing
I've ever seen or heard. The tweets will be flooding in as this one shot as or the finale of this one shot has been published. The tweets will be flooding in now, being like, my god, this sucked.
This generic ass city.
Oh, look, they're all small. Okay, cool.
Like
story,
every
bro.
Other campaign I've ever seen. Bunch of small.
Hey, every other, around. That's fine. That's like half the campaigns you've ever seen. I'll take that.
That's a very different interpretation of the phrase, every other. I think we should stop. We should stop. As soon as that comes out, as soon as Jasper starts weirdly interpreting things, it's one thing if I'm doing it. If Jasper is doing it, that to me is a sign that we need to stop recording.
Yeah, definitely. I haven't eaten this morning, so maybe that's why.
Me neither. Neither one of us have eaten.
Well,
food.
There we go. Neither one of us has eaten any sustenance whatsoever. So on that note, thank you very much for listening, patrons and non-patrons alike.
This is the kind of quality content that you get on the Patreon. This is actually way more on task or on topic. Actually, this is a very misleading. This is way more on topic than the Patreon stuff usually is.
We should have really gone off the rails a lot sooner if we wanted to actually give people an idea of what is on the Patreon normally.
I think it was like we were overcompensating for it being 9 in the morning and us not having eaten.
Yes, we were desperately trying to stay on task when normally we wouldn't.
Oh no.
Pip pip patrons.
And so long Shire folk.
And so long to the Shire folk.